Hello, everyone, and welcome to Coast to Cast, a podcast on coastal science, where we meet scientists and ask questions that don't usually appear in published papers. My name is Giovanni Coco, and today I'm here with Professor Zhengbing Wang. Zhengbing is a professor of morphodynamics of estuaries and tidal lagoons at Delft University in the coastal engineering section. But he has also been working and he still works as a senior specialist at Deltares. We all know Deltares, we all know Delft 3D, and in fact, Zhengbing is one of the key persons that has been behind the development of Delft 3D, but has also been a key person in the development of a variety of models for sediment transport, morphological evolution in estuaries, in tidal lagoons, on beaches. He has really worked on coastal morphodynamics in the broadest sense. I have been lucky enough to meet Zhengbing in several settings, but I've also interacted with him because of work, because at some point I was trying to do work on tidal networks, then I was trying to do work on river bifurcations. And a lot of times there was this name that was coming up, Zhengbing Wang, and it was never a paper, it was always a report somewhere. In fact, I want to ask about this. There is a lot of good science in reports of Deltares that haven't been published as papers and where really interesting work has been presented by Zhengbing Wang. But anyway, to a lot of talking, it's time to introduce our guest. Hello, Zhengbing. Welcome to Coast to Cast, and thanks for taking the time to join and answer some questions.
Yeah, thank you for the invitation.
How is it going here in New Zealand? Is the evening for you? Is the morning? I'm saving you from some administrative work, I hope.
Yes. Wow.
Okay, so tell us, I know a little bit of how you started in morphodynamics in coastal science, but tell us the story.
Yes, I think I should start with my student time here in Delft. When I was just about to choose a subject for the MSc project for to graduate, in that time it's called, was studying civil engineering. You know, civil engineering is very, very wide, broad faculty, so you can choose in all directions. One day, my supervisor, later supervisor, Professor Dijs de Vries, He apparently, in that time, he was the coordinator for students to choose their subject or something. He came to me, he asked me, what are you going to do for your graduation? I said, well, I considered, I think I will choose, there is one direction, it's called fundamental civil engineering thing. So I said, I want to do research, I'm not really typical type of civil engineer, probably. And he said to me, do you know what? You come from China, you hope you will go back to China. Do you know what the biggest problem in China is? It is a sediment problem. I just came from there. You know, you have this Yellow River, and it's a huge problem with the sediment. So therefore, you should come to me for your graduation project. And well, that was such convincing. So I came to him for talk about the subject, and he introduced me to this model of Kalapati on the suspended sediment transport. Probably you also heard about it. So he said, well, we should work on this. And he was collaborating with Professor Gais Verkneel. So Gais is my other supervisor. So we started working on the model of Kalapati. That was my earliest work on research. And then in this graduation project, and we were talking about the application of the model. And then Gais proposed we should use it for tidal rivers for estuary. So, and then we did it. And later, why I want to do the PhD, and they suggested me to continue on the work in estuary application of the Kalapati model. So since then, I have been working on that. So, and that's why I also coded the first version of the morphodynamic part of Delft 3D later. And that was based on the application of Kalapati's model of suspended sediment transport. You probably know Professor De Vries, at least by name. He's actually river morphodynamics, working on river morphodynamics. I think probably the first one working on morphodynamic models in rivers in the 70s, 1970s. So in that way, I came working on estuaries. So when I finished the PhD, I came to Delft Hydraulics. Was the idea that I will work there for 2 years, but that becomes a little bit longer. So I came into the Department of Estuaries and Seas. And since then, I have been still working on estuaries, tidal basins, and these kind of things. Yes, that's the story.
That's the story. That's a fascinating story. So some questions that are not necessarily about research. How do you balance your personal life and academic work?
It's for me not such a big problem, probably because my wife was never complained about that we never go on regular holidays like the Dutch people do, because the last 3 years is different, but before that, I spent almost all my holidays in the university somewhere in China. So sometimes she come with me, comes to China as well. And sometimes if I go on conferences, and then she goes with me. But we spent a little time on the regular holidays like the Dutch people do.
Yeah.
But she never complains, so it's okay. I do not really have a problem.
What are your interests out of work?
You are asking about hobbies, these kind of things. So,
yes.
Out of work, in weekend, I always try to do some sport. I play badminton.
Okay.
So I try to do it every Sunday, 2 hours. But it's not always possible, but I try to do. It's something I like.
That's a nice
I also like to watch the sport. So.
So let's go back now to science. What do you think about our ability to predict long-term coastal morphodynamics, beaches, estuaries? Seems like the question we always get asked is, what will this beach or will this estuary look like in 100 years? And we run our models. Should we trust them?
Yes, we should use the models. Of course, we cannot trust the model. The models, everything comes from the models. I think many people also say that it is not models doing the predictions. We do the predictions, and the model is just something to help us, and that will never change. The models will certainly improve the models, and they will getting better and better. But there are always limitations. Any model has a limitation, but we can do predictions based on the models or with the help of the models, but we can never simply trust them by saying, oh, this comes from models, therefore not like that. Yeah.
Always being critical of models. That's
yes, and all the models, even they are not perfect, they are still very useful. A typical example is about, for example, about these predictions of the effect of the delta works. You know, this Eastern scale, the storm surge barrier. People did really a good job in predicting how the tidal flat in the Eastern scale will behave, and it is, well, I must say that the prediction afterwards it's really good. But in that time, the models they use, they really primitive. It's nothing to compare it with the models nowadays.
Yes,
But
yes.
can we make much better predictions than that time? I doubt about it. But it is not models, but they are
Yeah.
useful.
That's the important thing. They have to be useful.
Yeah.
Slightly change the subject. Is there a paper that you really like, the paper that has affected your research?
I've been thinking about it. Of course, I read many very good papers. Maybe the one I should mention is the Starksma et al. 1985. That was about the river bend behavior morphology. And that somehow opens my eye of doing morphological research. Eh? So it is a theoretical model, right? It's not simply only the numerical model, especially the way they analyze it. Eh? So the problem. It's a really good paper. It's on river
Okay,
morphodynamics.
again on river morphodynamics.
Yeah.
So, given we're speaking about papers, I mentioned earlier on that I've come across a lot of times your work, I think also power laws in tidal estuaries, I said river bifurcations, and a lot of times I found your work, sometimes analytical work, sometimes numerical work, a lot of times in reports. I think for a while you were not so keen on publishing. You were more interested in doing the research.
Yeah, maybe I can explain it. It was already not it was not really the tradition here in Delft they are keen to publish until I think for me it's around 2010. I can tell the story. For example, my PhD thesis, there was nothing published before I got the PhD. Because that was said by my supervisor, Professor De Vries, he said, no, PhD thesis must be original. You cannot publish things and then later to use it in a PhD thesis. That is something against what he believes. Yes, in that time, it's really the case. And also, if you look at not only me, also the whole group at TU Delft and at Delft Hydraulics, they were very keen in publishing report. I still remember that in my time of graduation and PhD, there was a series, Delft University of Technology, this hydraulic engineering department was publishing that there was a series of reports. They just sent it to all the libraries worldwide, I think. So my MC thesis, for example, is also published in that series, and my PhD thesis as well. So in that is the way people here doing it. And when did I start to be keen to publish papers in journals? That was really when I was about to become a professor, because that was the first time I applied for a job. Because before that, I was always asked to come somewhere. So and then for this position, I have to defend against a committee, appointment committee. And one moment they asked me about the H index. I said, "What H index? What is H index?" So they explained to me how to find my H index, and now I suddenly realized so publishing is really important. So
Yes.
before that, and I did publish a couple of papers, but that was really from my supervisor that really say, really it, only if you really have something to tell to the rest of the world, really that there must be something really good or
Important.
impressive, and then you write a paper. So I only have a few papers before that. Still that, yeah.
Now I
But after
understand.
that, the things are completely changed. You know, nowadays also to our PhD students, the first thing that we tell them publish papers as soon as possible. So
Yeah.
that is, yeah, that was a tradition here. The system is changing here.
So I know you work on a number of projects, but do you want to tell us about some specific research that is exciting you at the moment?
Yeah, I can tell. It's at this moment is really this research on response of systems like the water sea to sea level rise is becoming very hot again. It's really it's in the, there's a special national research program. It's really a big program here, and we also have had some project, NWO project here, that is the Dutch Natural Science Foundation project we carried out. And now we are starting another project on this. And yesterday I was in Germany to defend one of the proposals also on the same subject together with the German partners. It's but this research I really started already in the 90 middle 1990s. That was not really because of only of the sea level rise, but especially because of the land subsidence caused by this gas extraction and salt extraction under the Weddell Sea. And so, and it is the same thing. Eh? So, if you look at the large scale, it is land subsidence is relative sea level rise. So, therefore, we call it the relative sea level rise. So, and then nowadays we are really, that's why now we do a lot of research again with this Sumida model. You know,
Yes.
for such a long time scale, we still apply that model, that simple aggregated model. And in this the project we just now starting now, this WattSat project, I really hope we can make a link between Delft3D and Asmida. So, you know, this people consider them as a completely different models, a different type of models. Of course, they are very different. But essentially, there is not really a difference in the physical processes. The only thing is, when you aggregate to such a scale, you cannot use the detailed hydrodynamic information to calculate sediment transport. Then we go back to the empirical relations for morphological equilibrium. But on the other hand, if you with the Delft3D, you never know where you are ending. So you that is one of the key problems that you do not understand how the morphological equilibrium, according to the model, is related to things like the forcing conditions and model parameters. And I think that is the essential problem of process-based model for long-term simulations. But then they obviously they both have a problem. But in this research with the PhDs, I hope we can make the link between the two better to improve our predictability, let's say, ability to prediction. Yeah.
It's great you spoke about this because I actually wanted to discuss this with you because you've been developing Delft3D which is a process-based model based on simulating very fast scale processes. But you've also been developing Asmita, which is a model that looks at very long-term timescales and actually uses completely different variables, completely different description of processes. So you think we should, depending on the question we ask and depending on the timescale we look at, we should use completely different models with different variables even?
Yes, and I always also say we should use both models. That is also the way we are doing. For example, in this environmental impact assessment project for the gas mining, so I did that part of work together with colleagues. What we did is using Asmita model to predict quantitatively how much intertidal flood is going to lose because of the land subsidence, this kind of questions. But then we also applied the Delft 3D model to simulate the sediment transport processes to check if the assumptions we made in Asmita is really true. For example, we say if there is a land subsidence that will cause more sediment import from North Sea coast to the Wadden Sea, then we should ask the question to Delft 3D, is that true? And we also use that type of model to answer such kind of questions. So together, then we have more confidence about the predictions. That's the way we are doing. I think, especially for research, we cannot say, no, you should use this or should use that. It is interesting you ask this. You know me better than many of my younger colleagues. Nowadays, they say that they all see that I'm doing a lot of things with Asmita or this type of model. They say, oh, well, it's a long-term guy. And I even do not know that I started developing process-based model in tidal regions.
So you always like to model and to describe processes. What is your take on machine learning that is a data-driven technique, data-driven approach to prediction?
Yeah, that is a very good question, Giovanni. And maybe I don't know if anybody told you about. Just I think 2 months ago or 1.5 months ago, the directors or management at Dotares, they announced we are going to stop developing these traditional models like Delft 3D. You heard about that?
No, I didn't.
So of course there caused a lot of reactions from the working floor. And the argument is now we are at in a time that there is maybe breakthrough via other ways of prediction. I think one of the things they mean is this machine learning things, AI stuff. But the thing is, it is still a little bit fake. What is exactly to be developed to replace models like Delft 3D. I personally think we surely should pay a lot of attention to this new technology and new technology in computer science, in AI, this kind of things that can really open new doors. Just like at one of these meetings, because of this, there are a lot of reactions. So they organize meetings in the discussion, and someone mentioned this argument. I think it's really interesting. He said, "Well, you remember in the 1970s when these numerical people came to Delft Hydraulics, telling the people we should develop numerical models, and there was also a lot of resistance, and people say, we have such nice physical scale models, so why should we develop stuff like that to computers? And they say, now you look at the situation now, and maybe we are now in the same time, kind of transition. I really believe that. I think this type of a newer way to develop models, although I'm not expert in that, but I do believe there's a lot of potential. But I do, on the other hand, I also tell them, no, do not throw away things like the 3D before you have something.
So, talking about scientific advances, is there an area of research where you think we could really improve and over the next few years we can actually make some major advance?
We should, Giovanni. It's funny. I don't know if you know him, Peter Hammond. Well, he's more ecological guy. He just retired. At his retirement, he asked a number of people to present in 5 minutes about a research idea with some side thoughts. So I presented an old idea. Personally, I'm still a little bit jealous to people's making weather predictions. These people making weather predictions, if you compare their predictions 30, 40 years ago and now, they really make huge progress. But that progress, we still have to make morphodynamic models. We are not in the same level. Of course, there's limitation. Eh? Also, with the weather prediction, you can never ask what is weather today, next year. That's a nonsense question. And that is in your diagram. You clearly illustrated. Sometimes there's impossible predictions, and sometimes there's the nonsense predictions. But there's such area, it is really, really relevant. But to make, let's say, short term to middle long term prediction in that part, we still do not have really some morphodynamic model to just started the simulation from today and stay the next 10 year how the Wallenstein or the Western scale will develop. That's something we still, that progress we still have to make, and maybe we can learn from these people making weather predictions, I think.
It's a very interesting topic. I think we could discuss for a lot of time about
Yeah,
this.
I know, I know.
Let me ask you that a slightly different question. What's the best or worst advice you ever received?
Maybe advice, it's not related to research, more related to education. I did not notice, one day, Marcel Stephen, he came to me. He said, what you should not do during your lectures, you often say, oh, this is very easy. This is, and then he said, it's not easy. You are frustrating the student. If they found it difficult, then you say, oh, this is very easy. You should never do that. I suddenly realized, no, I really was making big mistakes. I think about it, and then yes, I understand. It's not a good way to do
I think in the
it.
past I've annoyed river morphodynamicists by telling them that their job was a lot easier than ours, because they don't have waves.
Yes, they. I also will say sometimes I say. The river for river morphologists, they have easier job. But for me, the most important thing is, in reverse, it really solves that problem. Yeah? If you know the upstream discharge, you know the upstream sediment input, you know the width of the river at least, you
Then
know
yes.
the morphological equilibrium.
Yes.
And the morphodynamic model is just going from the predict from present situation to the unknown state. And that is something totally different in the estuaries. We start from today, we never know where we are ending with the model. But of course, I understand. I have also been working a little bit on river dynamics, river morphodynamics. So I know that they also have a lot of difficult problems.
Yes, definitely, definitely. Okay, let's leave science. Let me ask you some questions that are really not science related. Tell us about the music you listen to, your favorite band, type of music, composer.
In my car, I also was always I'm always playing the same music. So I sometimes got complaint from my wife. I'm always listening to this I think she's came from Taiwan. I think she already died many years ago. Teresa Teng. I don't know if you know
I don't
that.
know, but I will look for her.
I always listen to that music. So I must say I'm not very musical. I cannot play any music instrument. I'm always jealous. If I'm traveling with Dano, he was always playing music.
Yes. So what's your favorite dish? Or do you cook? Can you have a signature dish?
That is also a difficult question. It's there's not one thing I say, oh, that is I obviously I have to eat it. I'm a person is I adjust it very quickly. You know, many people from China come to the West. They never adjust. They cannot. They are not used to the European food, to the Western food. They also keep on eating only Chinese food. But I like all these nice things. It's not really something that I eat. If I go to a restaurant, I often order a lamb.
Okay.
There's a very simple reason, because my wife, she does not eat lamb. So at home, we never
I
eat that.
have no lamb.
So I come to the restaurant, I often order that.
What's the latest book you read?
That was a book recommended by Han Winterberg. You also know him, of course. It's The Water Kingdom. It's a book about the history and related to water problems in China. It's
I will
it's
look for
interesting.
this one too. And do you have a favorite movie?
No, I also never go to cinema. It's very maybe 2-3 times in this 40 years here in Holland, I went to a cinema. But yes, if you ask, there's one movie you really like. Well, sometimes it's once a year it comes on the television. I always watch it. It's a really nice film. It's called Pretty Woman.
Ah,
That
okay.
film,
Yes. Yeah.
it's
Yeah.
really touching to me. To
Nice.
look at someone from the lowest position in the society, and should not just accept that you are in that position.
We are now at the end of our conversation. Is there anything you want to say, anything you want to tell us that I haven't asked you? Or...
No, you ask many questions. It's really
One
good
thing I
question.
didn't ask you is we started your story and you were studying civil engineering in the Netherlands. How did you arrive to the Netherlands?
Oh, that was, that was just after the Cultural Revolution. They started this exam, national exam again. So I did that in 1978. That was the first time the national exam is introduced again. So it's on the national level to select a student from high school to universities. So I was selected to study at Tsinghua University in Beijing. So I was just studying in Beijing. I remember it was on a, it was in the weekend. I was just doing my homework at in my room. Then someone knocked the door, said, "Your telephone." "My telephone?" I said, "I don't know anybody in Beijing." So I went to the telephone. There was a telephone from a staff from our faculty. I didn't know her. She said, "No, you should come to that office for a meeting." I said, "That office? I do know the name of the office. That is the office of the rector." What did I do wrong? I have to see the rector. But on the other side, it sounds not such bad. So she asked me, "Do you know the way?" I said, "No, of course not. You know, Tsinghua University campus is a huge campus." I said, "Honestly, I know." She said, "Well, you know the aula, this big building." Yes, I said, "I know." She said, "No, you come to there. I'll bring you to that office." So I went there, and she brought me to the office. Obviously, I was late. The room was already filled with students. And then I said, "I'm Wang Zhengbin," and that's the way we say in Chinese about my name. And this guy behind the desk, he looked at this. "You can go to Holland for study." And that was after 3 months I was in Tsinghua University. So and then so we I started in October 1978 at Tsinghua University. And the meeting was just before the new year. And in February 1979, I came here in Delft.
Oh, wow. I'm glad I asked. We needed to know this story.
You didn't hear that? You didn't know that?
I knew bits. I'd heard only a few bits. So
Okay.
now yeah, I'm glad I have the full story from you. Okay. So it's time to close this show. We definitely thank again and
Yeah,
again
okay. Thank
Zhengbin
you. Yeah.
participating. Thank you. It's been an absolute pleasure, and thanks everyone for following and for listening to us. Bye.
Bye-bye.